Hello and welcome to Beyond the Back Page on Neo FM with myself, Patrick Donoghue. My guest on the show today is RT's sports commentator, Ger Canning. Of course, a broadcasting career that began in the early 1980s, Ger has commentated on a total of 77 All-Ireland finals, several Olympic Games and many World Cups as well. And I'm delighted to say that the man himself, Ger Canning, is on the line. Ger, thanks so much for joining me this evening.
It's my pleasure, Patrick. My pleasure. Nice to talk to your listeners.
Yeah, so, Ger, I mentioned you've commentated on a lot of All-Irelands. I think it is, if my research is right, I said 77. But this year is unique that there is no... Well, we hope to have an All-Ireland series later on in October. How have you found the experience? Because your summer would be defined by commentating matches and going to matches. Has it been a strange summer for you?
It has. It's been particularly peculiar, I guess. When the whole thing started in March, funny thing, I was even looking at my notebooks the other day and I was preparing for two matches that weekend in March. One on Saturday, one on Sunday. I was meant to do Armagh v Roscommon on the Saturday and then Galway versus Mayo on the Sunday afternoon in Saltill. And as things happen, you know, we're going to go back into action again in a couple of weeks' time, and those are the opening matches again. I think I'm going to be working on the Galway versus Dublin, Galway versus Mayo game. But to answer your question, it was very strange. It was. We wouldn't ordinarily have been doing an awful lot during April anyway, because that was a club month designated for the clubs to have the early rounds of their championships in most counties. Didn't always happen, but it was specifically for the clubs. We were meant to start around about the 10th or 12th of May. Mm. When that came along, I remember thinking to myself, oh, I should have been in wherever. As it happens, we hadn't had our schedules just yet, but I would have been somewhere on that day. And, you know, you're into June then, and you're thinking, gosh, this is very strange. But then the great thing, Patrick, was that the weather was extremely good. Mm. It was beautiful all the way through April, May into June. And I began to discover my garden, which I had never had a chance to do before, and see flowers coming out and changes of colours and the seasons and the warmth, and you began to think, God, this isn't half bad. I'm beginning to have a bit of a holiday here, you know. Yeah. So it was different, but you know, I just rode with it basically and took it nice and easily, and I assumed at some stage or other we were going to come back because I began to see football on the TV from Germany. Okay, it's professional football. There were no fans there, but football was beginning to come back, and then it came back in other countries, and I knew fairly quickly after that it was bound to come back into Ireland as well, hurling football, you name it, you know?
Yeah, and it could be very exciting. Now, I mentioned you would have began your career in the 80s, and it would have been knockout football, knockout hurling. You'd only have one bite of the cherry. So it could be, fingers crossed, all goes to plan. We have an All-Ireland series coming up in late October. It could be really, really exciting with the knockout structure.
Oh, it will be. In particular, I think, in football, Patrick, where there will be no safety net. You get one go at it, I think, starting with Cavan versus Monaghan in the preliminary match up in Ulster. And from that point onwards, you get one opportunity to be at your very best on the day of the match. And they'll be at peculiar times as well, because we're in November and December at that stage. So not every ground has floodlighting. Mm. And I think in the case of the match I mentioned there, Cavan versus Monaghan, I think that's going to be around about 1:30 lunchtime on a Saturday. So it's going to be pretty odd. The television stations, I don't know what the share out is yet between RTE and Sky as to which station has which matches, but I would imagine the bulk will be on RTE. Mm. But they will be at all kinds of different times. In hurling, you will get a second chance, which is good. It means if you lose your first round Munster Championship game, you're able to go back in to a kind of a loser section, so you will get a second go, and that's to be, I think, advocated as well, because there aren't as many top level counties playing for the Liam McCarthy Cup as you would have playing for the Sam Maguire Cup in football.
And the club championship has took precedent over the last couple of months, and yeah, I know you probably would have been covering some of the matches. Have you been surprised? I've been watching some of the matches. The quality is very good. And do you think that there's been a lot of talk now about having a split season, having the club championship the early start of the year? Do you think that is something that would be a good idea?
I think it will be probably the way they will go, Patrick. I think there is a strong lobby now from among the players in particular, and I think Croke Park is going along with it as well. Yes, there have been some absolutely brilliantly outstanding performances. There have also been quite a number of matches that I've watched that were one-sided. I was working on the Limerick County Hurling Final recently, and you had a superb performance by Napiershig to win it once again. But really, by the early stage in the second half, you knew this game was over. You had something similar last weekend in Kilkenny. Again, the champions there were way too good. And they won the game, you know, pulling up almost in racing parlance. So I have certain doubts about it still in my head. And people are talking in terms of the All-Irelands will be in July, whereas they used to be in September, and then the hurling final went back into August. So if you have the two finals now in July, neatly packaged, all handily done, and then you begin the club championship immediately, you see you've got 32 independent republics where the club is concerned. And it's all very well to say we'll start the club championship in August, but I can foresee a situation where certain clubs will say, we're not keen to play in August because we have so many students who are away. We won't always have the threat of COVID hanging over us. And you will have students going back to work in the States. And they won't be coming back until the end of August, early September. And clubs will be reluctant to play without their full strength, their full hand. So I have a slight doubt about that. I have also got a slight doubt about the level of publicity and the revenue accruing to the GAA from the club championships alone. It's never going to match the level of publicity that the GAA gets from the intercounty game. That is the elite of the sport. That's what so many people who are not necessarily committed to a club are anxious to see on a Sunday. We'll talk about on a Monday. And I do have certain doubts about how successful it's going to be from a publicity point of view, but from a playing point of view, it's undoubtedly going to be a wonderful success. And if our thoughts are first and mostly about the playing of the game, then that's going to work certainly. And all the players will tell you how much they have enjoyed being part of a club group. You saw it with Ballymun in Dublin last weekend. In the past, Ballymun have struggled to put a decent team together, without a decent team, but to get the players playing at their very best in September or whenever the championship was in Dublin, because the players had been playing for Dublin and they had put in such a huge effort winning the championship with Dublin at intercounty level. And there were six of the Ballymun players part of the Dublin squad under Jim Gavin. So inevitably, they were pretty weary and exhausted by the time it came to delivering for Ballymun. And as it happened, they weren't able to deliver for Ballymun. But this time around, it worked for them. Why? Because they hadn't had the pressure of playing for Dublin all through the summer. So in that sense, it worked for them, you know?
And I might go back to the start of your broadcasting career. Can you tell us, Ger, how did you get into sports broadcasting?
How I got into sports broadcasting. Look, I'm not sure how long your program is, but I'd give you one particular answer, which is the truthful answer, and which may raise an eyebrow or two. I never envisaged getting into sports commentary. That's for starters. I had been involved in theatre with an amateur group in Cork, and I had been doing a Christmas pantomime, or I was in rehearsal for a Christmas pantomime. I was directing this thing. And in the midst of the panto, there was meant to be a news bulletin. And one of the characters in the panto was meant to deliver the news bulletin in the fashion of an RTE news reader.
Mm.
And he had major problems trying to get the voice and get the diction. And I decided I'd put on tape the text of the news he was meant to read. And when I did it, I said to myself, crying out loud, I sound like a fellow called Michael Murphy, who was a famous newsreader in RTE at the time.
Mm.
And about a year later, lo and behold, there was an ad for newsreaders in RTE. And I said, you know, for the hell of it, I'll have a go at this.
Mm.
So I put in my name anyway, did the auditions, and I got accepted. And I went and I did the training. There were five of us in all, myself and four others. And I was offered a job at the end of it, but I didn't take it because I wanted to do sport. But the sport I wanted to do was I wanted to be a sports reporter.
Mm.
I wanted to be the guy who would go to the match and would deliver the one-minute report at the end of the game. I never thought in terms of commentary. I loved sport.
Mm.
And I met a couple of producers while I was in Dublin at that stage, working as a newsreader or training as a newsreader. And one of them was about to become a producer in the Cork studios. And he said, look, if you don't take up the job as a newsreader, would you work with me in sport down in Cork and we'll do some bits and pieces? I was a guy called Pat O'Donovan, and Pat said to me eventually when I got back down to Cork, he said, would you like to try a commentary? So I did. And you may not believe this, Patrick, and I kind of found it very hard to believe myself, but I was reading today whereby on Sunday next in Cork, the Cork County Hurling Final is going to be between Glen Rovers and Black Rock.
Mm.
And it's the first time in 42 years that the clubs are meeting in the Cork County Hurling Final.
Mm.
And that was the final that I did my first ever match on 42 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's how it started.
Yeah. And
it's a very long answer.
Yeah, no, that was perfect. And growing up, were you as a young boy growing up? I lived in Cork myself for a couple of years, and it's a real sporting city. Were you mad into sport? Did you play sport when you were a young fella?
Absolutely, I was. That's the one thing I loved doing. I lived in Douglas, which is in the south of the city.
Mm.
My father died when I was seven. My mother then reared me, and really there were no other. Well, I had a stepsister,
mm.
Or a half sister, I should say. My father had been married before. His first wife had died, age 26. Leaving him with a 12-year-old daughter. So this girl was 12 years older than me when I came along. The end result was I was basically growing up in Douglas, and to all intents and purposes, I was the only child in the house. Nearby was a football ground, and I spent most of my time playing in that football ground. I used to go to watch the Cork GAA teams every so often over in one particular part of the city, and I'd go watch the soccer teams in another part of the city, and I'd watch any sport that I could find anywhere. And I went to a school called Cailleacha de Chreasury, which was hugely into sport.
Mm.
Hurling and football was our passion. So I kind of grew up with this, and I lived for that. In fact, it was probably the only thing that I had any interest in whatsoever. I just love sport, and I still do.
Mm. And we all see you, Ger, doing the commentaries, and we see the end product of your work. But what level of, give us a sense of the level of research and work you would do prior to a broadcast, say on a Sunday, if you were doing an All-Ireland or even any match, what level of research would you need to put in?
Well, I first of all don't distinguish between All-Irelands and any other match.
Of course.
Any other match gets the same level of treatment that I can possibly put in. For me, it's now pretty much a 7 days a week thing. Mm. I've been full-time at this for the bones of 30 years, I guess. I'm beginning to make plans on the Monday night coming home from a game that I've been working on that afternoon for the following week. I'm mapping out where I need to be, who I need to talk to, what I need to be doing. And I then start Monday, and I go through every match that the teams I am dealing with on the following weekend have played in the last year. So I'll write down every team that they have put out, the shape of their team, how many times everybody has played, how many times they've scored, what they've scored. And I will do a page on each player who I think could play in the game, irrespective of whether he's the goalkeeper or somebody who's number 26 and might not come on. But he just could come on. You must always anticipate something happening. It's unrehearsed drama in that sense. Mm. You don't have a notion what's going to happen in the game. And therefore, you must try and cover every possible eventuality. And the more you do it, the better you should become at it. That's the theory anyway. Mm. But the more you do it also, the more you will realize can go wrong. Mm. Which maybe you didn't realize when you were starting out first, and you went in rather naively, and you perhaps were thinking, I've got it all covered, I've got every angle covered. But there will always be something new, something different that will happen. I'll give you a little example. I was doing a game in Tyrone a couple of weeks ago. It was a nighttime game. Mm. It started, I think, at 7:30. At that stage, it was still bright for a while. We were working in a commentary box up on scaffolding, and we were into the second half, and I began to realize the floodlights are on, but my box is now quite black, and I can't read the sheet of paper that's in front of me with the names and the numbers of the subs on it. So it's proving a bit awkward, and as it happened, the game finished level and was going into extra time. So at that stage, when we were in the commercial break, I just said to the director, anybody there got a lamp or a light that I can switch on here so I can see the papers in front of me? And yeah, somebody said, why didn't you think of it before? And I said, I didn't even think, in fact, that it was going to be dark and I wouldn't be able to see, you know? So a simple little thing like that. You try to think of everything that can possibly go wrong and try to put it right beforehand. That's why when I go to a ground, I go there far earlier than is necessary, really. Because I need to see where I'm going to work. Mm. I need to see the monitors that are in front of me. Are they in the right position? Is there space there for whatever papers I need to put down? Now, some people think, what are the papers are for? Papers in case you go completely dry or in case you go and have a complete blank. And I make no excuse for that. Have as many papers as you need there in front of you to cover anything that might possibly happen. It's facts, it's figures, it's things that you've written down, that you've researched. You've probably got it into your head. You may only use 5% of it, but you must have it down. You must have it there in front of you, because not to do so is ultra unprofessional in my view. And it's shameful not to treat the audience with the respect that they require and need, because they're the people who are, you know, you're serving them. That's the public you're working towards. I don't necessarily work for RTE. I work for the public. Mm. And that's the way I approach it. So to answer your question, it's a 7-day-a-week thing. Mm. And, you won't be working every hour of every one of the seven days, but you'll be coming and going to it. Mm. And as Micheál Murhurtig said to me once, you never actually stop researching. Mm. You're always picking up bits and pieces, you know?
Mm. And of course, having too much information is good, because, you know, you can never be, as you say, you can never be too prepared.
No.
Yeah.
No, that's absolutely true. I mean, there's just no excuse whatsoever for not putting in the hours and putting in the time. And nowadays it's different from when I started first, because nowadays we all have mobile phones, we have the internet, we've stuff on YouTube. The only thing that's slightly different is that maybe they're not as accommodating when it comes to trying to go to see teams in training at training sessions, because they're extremely secretive, as you know, and they don't want to give away any of their little pre-match plans. And they might be worried that you might see something or hear something that you shouldn't hear or see. So there is that element there nowadays, which wasn't necessarily there 30, 40 years ago, you know?
Yeah, and of course, we've talked a lot about your career commentating on Gaelic. But of course, you've done several sports. You've done Olympics. You've done Soccer World Cups. Is there any particular highlight, I'm thinking of the World Cups or the Olympics you've covered, is there any particular moment or game that will stand long in the memory?
I was asked that once before, and I've tried to think back. You'd think in terms of every Olympic Games, and in the Olympic Games, I was tending to do a lot of the stuff. I did about 14 different sports over all the Olympic Games that I would have been doing. I would have been doing rowing in recent times. I would have been doing hockey. The last Olympic Games, I was happy enough to cover the Irish men's hockey team. That was a sport I had to go and learn because I never played hockey. Mm. So they gave me about 9 months to go and learn it. And I would spend a lot of time going off to watch hockey matches. And I'd sit with referees and I'd ask them, what was that free given for? Or why was that match stopped there? What was the purpose of it? So I was trying to learn. And I treated it as an extra subject. Like some people would go off and do night courses and they'd learn carpentry or they might try and learn a new language. I wanted to learn a new sport, so I learned hockey and I was very glad to do so. Where the World Cups is concerned, because I kind of grew up with soccer, it was all about me when I was a young fella. I had the greatest of fun going to some of the World Cup. The first World Cup I did was in Spain in 1982. And I had never been around Spain before to the extent that I was away for 4 weeks, I think. And there was one game in particular. It was in the second phase of that World Cup. And it was between Italy, who went on to win the World Cup there in Spain eventually in 1982, and the most attractive team that was there at that stage, which was Brazil. And it was a game in the smaller of the two stadia in Barcelona, and it finished 3-2 to Italy. And I always remember that. It was just a magnificent game, a magnificent occasion. And I was so sad to see Brazil bow out because they were the team that everybody wanted to go and see, if at all possible. At that World Cup, I got to see Diego Maradona play for the first time. He was only 17. I remember I was with my producer. We were staying in Valencia, and he said, "Do you fancy going down to see Maradona play and Argentina play?" They weren't they the day? Yeah, they were the defending world champions from 1978. And we drove down to wherever it was, Alicante or someplace, and we had our press passes, which enabled us to get into the press area of any ground. So it was fantastic. It was just like a child in a sweet shop, you know, dream come true, wonderful. Yeah, this wasn't work, this was just pure enjoyment, but don't tell anybody that.
Yeah, listen, Ger, we'll leave you go. You've been very generous with your time. We've loved watching you describe all the action, going back to all them tournaments, and we're looking forward to seeing you back on our screens in October and on from then, talking about the action. So thanks a million for your time this evening, and look after yourself, and safe wishes to you and your family in these strange times.
Thank you very much, Patrick. It was a pleasure talking to you, and good luck to all of your listeners.
Thanks a million, Ger. It was great to talk to you. Thank you. That's great. That was Ger Canning, RT presenter, talking about his career in broadcasting. And we could have talked away with Ger for hours and hours, but I suppose unfortunately we had to cut him short because I suppose we're up against time.